Here in Canada, the rate of HIV infection in prisons is estimated to be at least 10 times higher than that of the general population. The rate of hepatitis C infection is approaching 30% of the prison population. The rates of both hep C and HIV infection for women in prison are higher than that of men. What is going on inside Canadian prisons that lead to this high-level infection? In terms of action, what's not going on so that these numbers continue? There are currently no needle exchange programs inside Canadian prisons. This despite the fact that for more than a decade, there has been a continual release of reports, inquiries, and calls for needle exchange programs to be set up behind bars. One of the most recent reports on the topic is titled Prison Needle Exchange: Lessons from a Comprehensive Review of International Evidence and Experience. It was released by the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network. It takes a closer look at several other countries around the world where needle exchange programs have been set up successfully inside prisons. Here to talk to us about the issue is one of the authors of that report. Glenn Betteridge is a senior policy analyst with the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network, and he's speaking with us tonight from Toronto. So welcome to the show, Glenn.
Good evening.
So the rates of HIV and hepatitis C inside prisons are far higher than those on the outside. Why is this?
Two reasons, principally. One is Canadians' response, our societal response to drug addiction, is incarceration. So we have a prohibitionist approach. And there are a lot of people who use drugs in Canada, and specifically use intravenous drugs, who are infected with HIV and hepatitis C. So they end up in prison. And the rates of HIV and hepatitis C amongst people who use injection drugs are astronomical compared to the general population. And so we find that community and the problems associated with injection drug use replicated inside Canadian prisons. Once they get inside Canadian prisons, people who inject drugs have no access to clean injection equipment, so sterile syringes and needles. And so that helps the propagation of HIV and hepatitis C behind bars.
And can you tell us a little bit more about why a needle exchange program in prison will address these conditions that you've described that are inside the prisons?
Yeah. We're not saying that a needle exchange will eliminate the HIV and hepatitis C problem completely in prisons. What we are saying is people on the outside who use needle exchanges have a means of protecting themselves from HIV and hepatitis C infection if they're not already infected. And if they are already infected, they have a means of protecting their injection partners. So clean needles allow people to inject safely. And so by making clean needles available in prisons, we're replicating in prisons what we do on the outside. And so it's a sound public health measure, and it's the standard of practice to prevent HIV and hepatitis C infection in the community resulting from injection drug use. So there's government-funded needle exchange programs from coast to coast in Canada. Why not have them inside prisons so people who do inject drugs have access to this harm reduction measure in the same way they would when they come from or return to the community? Because we know the vast majority of people who are imprisoned in Canada aren't imprisoned forever. They will return to communities. And what's done or not done in prison in terms of public health measures will have an impact on public health generally. So these people's sexual partners, their injection drug partners, when they go back out into the community.
And so you mentioned, you know, the existence of needle exchange programs on the outside. How did they come about, and how was the resistance or any resistance to their implementation on the outside? How was it overcome in that situation?
Well, there's been a move to a harm reduction approach to drug use. So rather than seeing drug use as criminal behavior, Canada's drug strategy now envisages drug use as a health problem, not only a criminal law problem, or not principally a criminal law problem. That being said, the vast majority of resources that are spent in Canada, upwards of 95%, are spent in terms of the resources spent to address the problems associated with drug use, 95% are spent on prohibition. But the mentality is changing. And so the idea behind harm reduction is we implement pragmatic programs to address the harms associated with drug use. And needle exchange in the community is one such pragmatic program. Thankfully, we haven't seen the type of ideological or dogmatic opposition to needle exchange programs that countries like our southern neighbors, the United States, keep fighting on a state-by-state, city-by-city basis, trying to get needle exchange programs implemented. So these programs have been part and parcel of the response to HIV in Canada, and HIV in particular associated with ingestion drug use, since the early days of the epidemic, since the 80s.
And so there's been at least a decade-long history of a public and organized call for needle exchange programs inside Canadian prisons. Can you tell us a little bit more about the history and maybe what has changed in terms of over the last 10 years, like where we've come from and where we're at now?
Yeah, some of the first reports to call for needle exchange in prison were from PASAN, which is the Prisoners HIV/AIDS Support Action Network based in Toronto, and they released a report in 1992 calling for a prison needle exchange. In 1994, the Expert Committee on AIDS in Prisons, which was a committee set up by the Correctional Services of Canada, also recommended prison needle exchange programs be piloted. And this report is remarkable because of its depth and breadth of the analysis. So it conducted surveys of inmates. It interviewed people responsible for administering the prison system in Canada, as well as conducting a legal ethical analysis. And it came to the conclusion that prison needle exchange was a sound legal ethical public health measure. And so since that time, since the Expert Committee on AIDS in Prisons recommended that needle exchanges be piloted in prisons, there have been numerous other committees, working groups, and study groups that have recommended that, as well as non-governmental organizations. And recently, a number of reports have recommended needle exchange in prisons, not only the report that I co-authored, but the Ontario Medical Association has recommended needle exchanges in both provincial and federal prisons be piloted without delay. And the Office of the Correctional Investigator, so the Federal Ombudsman for Prisons, has also recommended in the report he recently presented to Minister McClellan that needle exchanges in prisons be piloted as well. So that's sort of a brief history of recommendations for needle exchange. And what has changed over this decade is a number of harm reduction measures have been introduced in federal and provincial prisons. Principal among them are condoms, so that inmates now in most prisons have access to condoms and lubricant, and in some cases dental dams, to protect themselves and each other from the sexual transmission of HIV. Another harm reduction measure that's available at the federal level and not so much at the provincial level is access to methadone maintenance therapy, which is a medically indicated treatment for heroin addiction. So get people away from needle use by giving them this substitution therapy, which is taken orally. And the third harm reduction measure we've seen introduced in federal and some provincial prisons is bleach. So bleach that can be used to clean tattooing needles, because they represent a potential source of transmission of HIV and more so hepatitis C. And bleach can also be used to clean injecting equipment as well.
And what are the reasonings, like what are the arguments, their arguments, for this continued delay on the implementation of these programs? And how do we debunk these arguments that they put out or people put out to not implement these programs?
On the part of the government, there has never been a clear argument articulated as to why they're not going to move forward doing this. I think what the government relies on is public apathy generally around the plight of prisoners and public disinclination to accept the argument that prisoners do have human rights, including the right to the highest attainable standard of health, just like people in the community. And the government has also not been forward-thinking in terms of providing a safe workplace environment for people who work in prisons. One argument we hear fairly frequently from correctional officers, so the people who are in prisons and have the most contact with prisoners, is they don't want to see needle exchanges because it will be a threat to their safety, meaning basically that they're afraid that prisoners will use needles from a needle exchange program to assault them, to stab them. But in fact, the evidence is quite the contrary. In the six countries with over 50 programs in total in place, needle exchange programs, there has not been one recorded incident of a needle from an exchange program being used as a weapon against a prison guard or even as against another inmate. When the current situation, which prevails in Canadian prisons, presents great dangers to staff because needles are contraband, they're hard to come by, and so there's numerous dirty needles that are hidden in and around a prison, and so guards run a risk of being stuck by these needles, and these needles are in no way sterile and in no way clean because they have to be used over and over by prisoners, and so the chances of a guard being stuck by a dirty needle are greatly increased. Whereas with a prison needle exchange program, the programs that have been studied scientifically show over 98% return rate. So 98% of the needles that go out come back into the program. So the needles, they're not a free-flowing circulation of needles out of control in the prison environment. And those needles that are out there and that are kept by prisoners according to the rules of the program are more likely to be clean and less likely to carry infections like HIV and hepatitis C. So the security argument is a specious argument. It has not been borne out by the evidence of the programs we studied in the six countries and over 50 prisons. And that's the main argument we hear. The other argument we hear is more of a kind of moral, ethical, legal argument, judgmental argument all mixed together. And that's about our basic zero tolerance for drugs in prisons. So drugs are illegal in prisons as it currently stands. And in every country that has a needle exchange program, drugs continue to be illegal in prisons. But we hear prison guards and officials in Canada saying it doesn't make sense to provide inmates with clean needles when drugs are illegal. Moreover, many prisoners are in prison precisely because they have drug habits or for crimes associated with possession or acquiring drugs. But that's a very narrow view of the law. Yes, drugs are illegal in Canada and contraband in prisons, yet criminal law is not the highest law in Canada. It doesn't represent our highest principles and aspirations as a society. Human rights law represents those rights and aspirations, and under international covenants and agreements to which Canada is a signatory, prisoners, just like everybody on the outside, has a right to the highest attainable standard of health. And this right to the highest attainable standard of health includes the right to measures to prevent HIV and hepatitis C infection, like needle exchange. So our response to the argument that drugs are illegal is, yes, that is true, but there are higher laws and higher norms at play here, and those are the protection of human life and the protection of prisoners.
And in the research for this report, you looked at needle exchange programs in prisons in six other countries. Do you want to give us a few highlights of some of the key things that you learned from studying those programs in these other countries?
Well, one of the things I've already mentioned, and that's these programs have proven safe. So I won't, you know, go on about that. They've also proven effective. So in countries that have implemented prison needle exchange where it's been evaluated scientifically, there's been no increase in drug use, and there's been a marked decrease in needle sharing. And there has also been no new HIV or hepatitis C infections in the prisons and the program studied. So it's an effective harm reduction measure. It's effective at stopping needle sharing, and it's effective at stopping the transmission of HIV and hepatitis C through shared injection equipment in prisons. It's also been remarkably cost-effective when you consider, in the Canadian context, the lifetime cost of treating HIV infection are around $150,000. Needles cost pennies, individual syringes. And healthcare workers in Switzerland, one country where needle exchanges have been implemented in a number of prisons, report that they save a lot of time because they're no longer treating common injection site infections, meaning that when people are injecting with dirty needles, they run the risk of not only hepatitis C and HIV infection, but blood infections and infections at the injection site. And so healthcare workers previously spent a lot of time treating these abscesses and other types of infections. That time they spent doing so has been reduced significantly. Another lesson we learned is that prison needle exchanges can be successfully implemented in a whole range of prisons, so from minimum to maximum security, men's prisons, women's prisons, prisons with 75 people up to 1,600 people. So what's important is that the program be designed taking into account the needs of the prisoners, the needs of the staff, and the institutional setup. So those are some of the lessons we've learned.
And logistically, for people to sort of envision how they would work, how would needle exchange programs in Canadian prisons work?
There have been a number of ways they've worked in other countries. The easiest way is hand-to-hand distribution. And this has been done in three ways, the hand-to-hand distribution. In some prisons, it's been left up to healthcare workers, so nurses and physicians, to be the point for distribution. So prisoners would present themselves to health services and exchange needles with one of the healthcare professionals. The second way is by using people from outside the prison. So for Spain, an example, non-governmental organizations have played a big role. They come into the prison and they are the hand-to-hand people who exchange needles. There's also machines. The third hand-to-hand distribution method, which is the most remarkable and has proved enormously successful, is peers. So prisoners are trained as peer outreach workers and distribute needles 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And this is the case in Moldova and some prisons in Kyrgyzstan. And this allows the prisoners to have uninterrupted access to clean needles. And it's been extremely successful. And the move from a healthcare-based distribution to a peer distribution saw the number of needles exchanged shoot up. So speaking to the success of the program. Another method of needle distribution or exchange is through automated machines, kind of like vending machines. But instead of putting money in, you put a used needle in, push in the handle, pull out the handle, and you get a clean needle. So that type of simple machine. They've been designed in Switzerland and in Germany and are at work currently in prisons there. And they cost, you know, they're not cheap, but in relation to the cost of treating somebody for HIV over a lifetime, they cost about, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 euros, which is roughly 8,000 to 10,000 Canadian dollars. So those are the two principal methods of distribution, hand to hand and through these type of machines.
And so earlier you mentioned this past decade or so, the continued reports and various inquiries by various bodies, non-governmental organizations, et cetera, calling for these needle exchange programs. And recently you've put out this report. The correctional investigator had in his annual report a call for needle exchange programs. So what do you think needs to happen to get the government and CSC to act? And sort of where do we go from here with all, where we're at now? And sort of what do you see in the future?
Well, what needs to happen is political leadership, and not only from ministers and ministries responsible for prisons, but those responsible for health as well, because this is a public health issue. It's not a prisoner health issue. Prisoners are part of the community, as I said. The time they spend in prison is the exception to their, you know, circulation and presence in the community. So the impacts are for public health generally. So ministers and ministries of health need to take a leadership role and work with their counterparts in corrections. Because as I mentioned before, the public is not terribly sympathetic to arguments about prisoners' rights and prisoners and empowering prisoners to, you know, take control of their own health and their own circumstances. So ministries of health really need to take a lead and support ministries responsible for prisons to do the right thing. And in distributing our report and briefing, we spent equally as much time talking with ministers and ministries of health as with those responsible for corrections, like Correctional Services Canada. So we really need these two ministries to work together to bring this agenda forward. We need them to demonstrate political will and political leadership about this. And we need them to make evidence-based decisions. So not decisions based on prohibitionist views of drugs or other sort of moral or ideological positions, but we need them to look at the facts and look at the successes and the safety of these programs and be willing to stand up and say that needle exchange programs are safe and effective and that prisoners have a legal right to them, and we're going to do the right thing. Minister McClellan has made some positive pronouncements. When asked about the report, she said, "We can't put our head in the sand and pretend drug use in prisons doesn't exist. We have to address the problem." And Minister Dosange on the health side federally has also been supportive of the equivalence argument, the argument that prison needle exchanges are the standard of practice, needle exchange programs are the standard of practice in the community, and they should be the standard of practice in prisons. So hopefully, at least at the federal level, we have some indication of a willingness of health and the Minister of Responsible Corrections to work together to explore this.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this evening, Glenn.
It was my pleasure, Emily.
We have been speaking with Glenn Betteridge. He's with the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network, and he is one of the authors of a recent report calling for needle exchange programs to be set up inside Canadian prisons. The report is titled Prison Needle Exchange: Lessons from a Comprehensive Review of International Evidence and Experience. And if you want more information or you want to check out the report, you can find it on their website. It's www.aidslaw.ca. That's AIDSLAW.ca.